for those who know every line, and for those finding Star Wars for the very first time, welcome to Growing Up Skywalker.
Welcome to Growing Up Skywalker. My name is Anna.
And I'm Sam. And today we're doing Andor Season 1, Episode 3, Reckoning.
Sam, would you like to give us our SAG-AFTRA strike / Solidarity Forever speech?
Sure thing. As you may or may not be aware, SAG-AFTRA and WGA are still striking.
Still striking.
Also, international auto workers, we got lots of strikes going on.
We got unions for days.
Yeah.
Stay strong, my friends.
So stay on that picket line. Don't buy stuff that you don't need to from companies that are being stricken against. That includes giving all the workers whatever leverage you can. So skip the watch through this week and maybe don't buy a new car.
So Growing Up Skywalker, we're not a unionized podcast, but we do stand in fierce solidarity with our friends who are actors and writers and creators who are trying to get leverage for livable wages. So it really helps if you just kind of skip the rewatch sometimes. Or all the time, we hope that we give you a detailed enough plot summary that you don't have to go to the platforms that are being stricken against to watch the thing we're talking about. So just listen to us and not to Disney Plus. TM. Yeah,
this is a nonprofit thing, so no worries there.
No worries here.
But we definitely stand in support of all striking workers everywhere. Everyone deserves fair recompense for their labors. And speaking of that.
Speaking of people who want fair recompense for their labors, I feel like we could be talking about Cassian Andor.
Oh boy. So this is a doozy. This is the third and climax of the first three episodes that came out back in 2021 in September.
Oh, these all came out all at once?
They did.
Ooh, that would have been so dramatic.
So what happens?
Okay, so. Andor, Season 1, Episode 3, Reckoning. We intersperse this episode with the current day and with flashbacks to young Cassian on Canary. Mm-hmm. So we actually open this episode with young Cassian. He's all by himself. The leader of his child gang has been killed. And he's exploring the crashed cruiser looking for revenge on anyone responsible for killing his friend. So he picks his way through all of the creepy, dead, jaundiced officers.
Yeah, they are bright yellow. It's actually really scary.
And he gets to the command room and apparently sees his reflection for the first time and then smashes it in a fit of rage and then keeps smashing the entire command center with his blowtorch, his blow dart torch. Then we cut to the present day on Ferrix. I had not put the pieces together last episode that this Luthien character is the buyer for adult Cassian's very expensive thingy.
Yes. It's an NS9 Starpath unit.
Starpath unit. Thank you. I just kind of in my notes put thingy. So that's good.
So he disembarks his space bus with three jackdaws from The Witcher. And then
is that who that guy is? Yeah. I knew he looked familiar.
Yeah, so apparently dragons live forever and are now in space. And three jackdaws is like, you're going to get scammed. And Luthien strides off and meets with Bix.
And then they plan to meet up with Cassian, but they have to very quickly buy the Starpath unit because now there is a warrant out for his arrest and the mall cops are coming. At this exact moment in time, Cyril Karn and his guards are landing on Ferrix and they're coming to take Cassian prisoner and or shoot him dead.
So they roll into Marva's house and toss it inside out, upside down, looking for everything. And everyone outside is making a huge ruckus. The whole time that they've been landed, these cops have been like given really mean mugs from all the locals.
Yeah, fair. Because they're hassling an old lady.
Mm-hmm.
They do not have to hassle Marva for very long because Cassian radios in to B and is like, B, are the comms working? Are you back to Marva's house yet? And they triangulate his location. He's on the east side of town in an old warehouse waiting for Luthen.
I wish to describe this old warehouse where Cassian is waiting in exacting detail.
Yes, please do.
So it is a large Victorian factory-esque thing with like brick columns and brick walls, and there are stanchions everywhere that are chained up. So there's a whole bunch of pulleys with chains holding up a bunch of massive steely component things.
Like chassis?
Yeah, they look more like lifty things to me. But if you imagine just being in a mechanic shop and there's a whole bunch of like V8 engines held to the ceiling with chains, and it's decrepit and it's dusty and it's rusty, that's what this is. This is the kind of nightmare that like an OSHA inspector has when they're in a coma.
That is a very prescient statement, Sam, considering how the warehouse scene plays out.
Yes.
So we get a kind of slang name for the mall cops, which is corpos, mm-hmm. which I love.
Those corpos.
Because corpulent mm-hmm. is one of my favorite words. And so if the corpos had gotten to the warehouse quicker, they would have interrupted a fascinating conversation between Luthen and Cassian. Cassian thinks Luthen is just there to buy the Starpath unit, but Luthen knows Cassian's dad and makes him explain how he got his hands on the Starpath unit in the first place.
Because Luthen is like, what is the unit here? And Cassian's like, I don't know, is the money here? And Luthen just reaches into his pocket, casually flashes 40,000 credits and shoves it back in. And he's like, I'll give you another 1,000 if you tell me how you found it.
And so Cassian explains, he's like, I literally dressed up like an imperial mechanic. I got my hands oily. I strolled in, and the imps are so arrogant that they never would have believed that a scum rat like me would belong on their ship. And so I just stole it. Mm-hmm. And then Luthen is like, I want you to come with me and fight this fight for real.
Yes.
And then the mall cops arrive. They trace Cassian's comlink. They have the warehouse surrounded, and there is an intense firefight.
It's great because they're banging on the door, and Luthen's like, stand back. Boom, blows up the door.
Put the slap charges on the door like a boss.
But that starts the critical existence failure of this OSHA nightmare because chains start snapping every which way. Cassian is running and trying to grab the Starpath unit. Luthen's like, leave it. We have an escape underneath this place where there aren't an enormous amount of like 2,000-pound objects and chains whipping around everywhere. There's a shootout going on. Chains are flying every which way. People are getting crunched. They're running back and forth. Cassian gets danged pretty hard, but he actually has to leave the Starpath unit behind.
Yeah, so they yeet out through an old furnace pipe, and they have to leave the box, and then they're going to try to get to Luthen's ship out in the wasteland. So they slip through the city. They're avoiding all of the guards. And I want to note, this is important for aesthetic reasons and also, like, the visceral feeling of the episode. All of the people who live on Ferrix, as they saw the corpos moving through the city, they started up this call. They're clanking metal on metal 4 beats at a time. Mm-hmm. They're warning everybody to get off the streets and, like, mess with the corpo's day.
And so Marva is sitting there, and she has 2 cops watching over here, and she says, gets to you, doesn't it? That's what a reckoning sounds like. You want it to stop, but it just keeps going.
And you know what you like even less? When it does.
It's when it stops. That's when you really start to fret. And it stops. And the guards watching her run out. And then we cut to Cyril in an alley, sweating, Mosque on top of a roof with a rifle, drinking from his flask because they've got them surrounded. They know they're going to have to come this way. The ambush is going on. And then Cyril, a gun barrel appears behind his head.
Yeah, Cassian gets the jump on Karn while he lies in wait. He gags him. He leaves him tied up. And then he and Luthen go and have their pick of speeders because they mm-hmm. need to get to Luthen's ship out in the waste. We finally see Cassian being very good at stuff. because he sends out a decoy car. They pack it full of slap charges. They send it screaming out into the street. The mall cops are shooting at it. It flips over. They surround it. And Karn looks up at Mosk on the top of the building, and they have this big smile because they got the
good guys win.
They got the guys. And then Luthen sets off the slap charges, and he and Cassian scoot away on an actual speeder bike home free.
The car blows up. It blows up all of the mall cops. Mosk starts losing it. He's calling in for Cassivac. He's like, Nova, Nova, Nova. He's on his radio, and Cyril is just striding forward shell-shocked because he just brought like six men to their death.
All is not 100% well on Ferrix because Luthen and Cassian lost the box. Mm-hmm. In the scuffle, some of the mall cops handcuffed Bix to a wall and beat her up, and Space Tim saw it, freaked out, and he got shot dead. And Marva and Bee are home alone. Their house has been ransacked. They don't know where Cassian is. He left them no money and no notice. And then the episode concludes by kind of finishing up the Canary plot by mirroring what has been going on the whole episode. On Canary, throughout the episode, we've been getting flashbacks. Young Marva was some kind of cool treasure hunter scavenger lady, and her husband Clem mm-hmm. comes along with her, and they've come to strip the goods out of the downed cruiser on Canary, and they run straight into young Cassian while he's demolishing the command center of the ship. And time is tight. There is a ship coming in from orbit to see what's going on with the crash site. Marva has seen the body of the officer outside stuck full, like, hedgehogged full of blow darts, mm-hmm. and she knows that the kids are probably going to get killed when the ship comes in. So she space chloroforms Cassian and hauls him up into her arms, and she and Clem take off. So now we know that Marva is Cassian's adopted mom. And the episode ends with young Marva looking back as she lifts off in her ship at young Cassian as they go somewhere unknown. Mm-hmm. And Luthen and Cassian are also going somewhere unknown.
There's one more absolutely heroic moment that's critical to the plot, which is as soon as the bells start ringing, Brasso just leaves his job. And it turns out he doesn't work at a brick factory. He works at a salvage yard.
Yes.
And he goes to one of the mall cop pod ships. And then he walks away. And when the bells stop, the dude who shot Tim, Jabroni McKiltim, he runs back to the pod and he takes off, and his pod has been
anchored
to a massive piece of metal. He takes off, immediately is off balance and crashes, and that panics the hell out of the ambushing forces. Everything lines up perfectly. So also at the end of the episode, not only is Bix being taken down very PTSD'd, but Brasso is sitting there drinking a beer being like, I just killed a man. Maybe more than one. Not sure.
So there were a lot of reckonings in this incredible piece of television. Oh my gosh. It's so hard to describe the feel of this episode, which was so taut. I finished watching it and I wanted to watch it again.
Every single person in this episode is out of their depth, and it really shows. It's really,
really
cool. Yeah, so let's refactor which order the plots are. So we'll call the A plot the Canary plot this time. So in that plot, Cassian doesn't even recognize himself in a mirror. And he may have been like a very small child being Lord of the Flied, or he may have like just not seen himself in a long time. But he doesn't recognize himself, and he just decides to smash stuff. And then Marva and Clem are going along with like, hey, we only have 9 minutes to clear this out. We don't have time. Just leave the kid. And Marva's like, no, lol. I'm just going to roll it. I'm just going to make it happen. But the idea of Cassian being so out of his depth of what's going on and us finally learning what the Canary plot turned out to be is pretty critical. Mm-hmm. But also, Cyril and Mosk are like, yeah, we'll just bring 12 dudes, it'll be fine. And then...
Well, so the B plot is the Corpos trying to take down Cassian. And in previous episodes, we were like, they're taking 12 guys?
Yes, nowhere near
that's
enough.
Crazy. No, I was like, that's so many guys yeah. for one slippery rogue. And it turns out it was not nearly enough. And they did not act with nearly enough haste.
Yeah, yeah. And part of that's because Luthen is like... an honest to God ideological rebel. Like he is, don't you want to fight those bastards for real, is what
I
he says to Cassian.
Loved that.
And Cassian's holding his pistol to Luthen's head. And Luthen's like, you can kill me. That's not the important part. Like, I don't worry about it. Luthen is stone cold, which is great. But then the survivors of the factory fight are like, there's two of them. And Mosk immediately starts to panic. He's like, if there's two of them, I don't know if I brought enough dudes. Which is scary.
It is amazing to watch Cassian and Luthen slip through Ferrix this episode, just ruining the mall cop's day. Because we haven't really seen Cassian be good at anything yet.
True.
Like, it's interesting and gratifying to watch him be Luthen's equal while they're escaping the city, doing the speeder decoy, sneaking up on Karn. Mm-hmm. And I also wanted to talk at some point about how one rebel morphed into two, morphed into three, and then all of a sudden the mall cops think that they are part of like an inquisition.
Right. Well, because Brasso took down that pod and it's behind him, then the radio chatter is like, oh, they're behind us. And they just have no idea what's going on. And that's when the ambush occurs. So they are counter-ambushed just by the stochastic rebellion of what's going on in Ferrix, that when the cops show up, you start causing havoc in a way that is deniable.
This is what I have talked about so many times on the podcast, how in fascist and tyrannical situations, if you want to stage nonviolent protest, you just need 3% of the population to stand up and speak against the regime. So we saw something amazing this episode, which is the entire populace of Ferrix not directly combating the Corpos, but rising up against them and ruining their day.
With the notable exception of the recently deceased Space Tim.
Yeah.
So Space Tim is revealed to be the rat because one of the other scavengers from, I think, the first or second episode who was talking, or no, he's the guy who owns the junkyard. Yeah, he's the guy who owns the junkyard where Bix makes the calls from. So he's also in the loop and he's like, what's going on? Why are they here? Who knows that Cassian is from Qunari? And then Tim is like, don't worry about Cassian. And Bix is like, how did you know we were talking about Cassian? No one knows he's from Qunari unless I told you, you know. And Tim's revealed to be the traitor. I found that particularly interesting because Tim is the blondest person on Ferrix.
Is he? He's a brunette.
He's more light-featured than Bix, than, I mean, not Marva, but than like Brasso or anyone else. Everyone else is very kind of swarthy, and he looked more Northern European to me at him. And the fact that he was the collaborator.
He looks scary. Like a British white guy.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know why Bix is so sad about his death. I mean, yeah.
Well, I was looking at that interaction as actually more discourse on the police rather than like an interpersonal drama.
Really? Right.
So I took Space Tim's death as Andor solidifying its stance on police brutality further. Mm-hmm. So what I was thinking about is I went all the way back to the pilot and I was thinking when Cassian kills two security guards on Morlana One who provoked him, he gets a legion of cops sent after him. But when the Corpos come to Ferrix, they just see Bix running through the streets and don't like the look of her. So they beat her bloody.
Yeah.
They handcuff her to a wall. They kill Tim just for getting too close to them. And nobody blinks an eye.
Mm-hmm.
And there is this fascinating thing, too, about the mall cops feeling so persecuted on Ferrix.
Oh, yeah.
When actually no one is standing directly against them, but they're creating a hostile atmosphere. So Cassian and Luthen are moving through the city, and Ferrix has circled the wagons, and they've closed up shop, and they're beating the signal to get off the streets, and it's freaking the mall cops out. And then when Brasso's trick blows up their getaway ship, this has just been two guys with blasters and one guy in the salvage yard moving against them. And all of a sudden, they feel like they are the target of an actual insurrection.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, together with them killing Space Tim and beating up Bix and then feeling so under attack by the people on Ferrix, I thought it was a really pointed comment on the perception of those in power that they are persecuted.
Yes.
When they get even the littlest taste of their own medicine.
Yeah, because they're bullies. Especially the mall cops are bullies. And if they don't have overwhelming force and get to do exactly what they want, then things fall apart.
Because they're bullies and they're also cowards.
Yeah, yeah. So Jabroni McKilltim is the guy who shoots Tim, obviously. And his squad leader is like, give me that rifle, go get the pod, because we've been distracted now. And I presume they were there because they were going to rape Bix, honestly. Why else would they grab a pretty girl off the streets for no reason?
I actually hadn't gotten that perception, which is interesting because I'm normally so sensitive to that. But I was weirded out that this attack was so dispersed.
Yeah, so the space cops show up in three separate teams of four with two extra on one of them, I guess, because that's what Cyril says eventually. Luthen's like, kill him. And Cassian's like, just tell me how many guys there are. And Luthen's like, just kill him. He doesn't know. Like, they're very good cop, bad cop. So we learn that there's 12 cops and two officers. So that's Mosk and Cyril and 12 nameless dudes. They're divided into three teams, and then they leave two dudes with Marva. A full team goes to the factory and is immediately just defeated.
Shish kebabbed.
They die horribly.
They get turned into smashed broccoli fritters men.
Bad news bears. So then we're down to 10 dudes total. And only 8 of them are part of this ambush. And 4 of them are sitting there, like, messing with Bix.
Yeah. And then the other crew is under Karn and Mosk. And there's this really I think this moment was so interesting because it shows the arrogance of the corpos. Mosk gets the radio call that everyone at the warehouse is under fire and a lot of them have died. And he's like, okay, we'll walk over to the warehouse.
The 10-minute walk.
And then they just walk. They don't run. They don't get there as quickly as they can to offer reinforcements. They just stroll over and they're too late.
They're definitely too late, but they are going to set up an ambush. And Mosk is already panicking. As soon as the first of his dudes die, he's like, oh, there's two men down. Mosk is starting to panic.
He's like, how is that possible?
Yeah, he's on the radio. He's saying, repeat that last, because he is not used to having anything go against him.
Yeah.
He's used to always getting his way because he shows up with what he presumed was overwhelming force. He's like, yeah, 12 dudes, we're going to arrest some scum rat. He's probably going to be drunk in a pod somewhere and we'll just chain him up and stun him and kill him. Easy breezy. And then when that isn't what happens, he has to be the one who's like, all right, Cyril, like, they're just intimidating us with these clanks. And that's not the case either. This is an amazing episode.
I was thinking about the title Reckonings, and I was thinking about which characters got Reckonings this episode. Mm-hmm. And I would say the biggest one is that the corpos get a Reckoning for coming in so arrogantly and with such presumption that they are going to succeed because they're big bullies and they're used to it. And then I also feel like Space Tim got a reckoning for being the rat.
Oh, yeah. Well, he played stupid games and won stupid prizes. Like, this is why you don't snitch. Because the cops... This is the same lesson that, what's his name? Zach Braff in Kenobi was doing. Like, when you lick the boots of fascists, they literally don't notice. They don't care that you're a bootlicker.
Because they expect subservience from everyone.
They do, but like you being the best little bootlicker doesn't provide safety for you.
Yeah.
You're still going to get squashed by the boot.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I would say that that is a commentary on Mosk as well, because Mosk, Karn is allowing Mosk to dictate the entire day, even though Mosk is under him in the hierarchy of command.
Well, that's just wise because Mosk has done this before and Karn has driven nothing fancier than a desk. So.
Yeah, totally. But Mosk is being the best little bootlicker to Karn, and Karn is useless.
He's a
sandbag. He's a deadweight in this situation.
I love the character of Cyril Karn just because, like, it's such good acting. Imagine getting cast for this role and they're like, look, we need you to be like a mall cop officer who is just a frayed, damp,
sweaty,
sheep. Paper towel. Like that is what we're looking. And you need to be like very handsome with like a strong jawline and a stick up your butt. And we just need you to be a dish rag. It's like, okay, this is real acting chops for someone to be as flaccid as Cyril Karn. It is amazing.
Okay. I hear you. I agree and appreciate all shade about Cyril Karn. But there was one really good thing that I loved about his character this episode, because Cyril Karn is the one character that I can remember in a long time across all the media on TV that I consume. He's the only one who has a really normal, well-calibrated response to death.
Yeah, especially in the Star Wars universe.
Well, yeah, but so often in action movies and thrillers and sci-fi and fantasy, people just spend lives like nickels, right? Mm-hmm. John Wick is the yeah. classic example of this. Mm-hmm. Like, people die 10 times a minute and no one cares or gives thought to what the impact of that life being gone is. But Karn, as he's watching men get picked off one by one and then suddenly all at once in the explosion, he really seems to feel every one of those human deaths.
Maybe. Or he feels, hey, this operation that I pulled off when my boss was away has not gone as well as I'd hoped.
Oh, I hadn't even thought about all the paperwork. Oh, no.
Because he's like, his boss is like, I need you specifically to not follow this up, to conjure an accident, to not do anything with this, because I don't want to shake the boat. You don't want to shake the boat. And please stop like tailoring your uniform. And Cyril's like, this boat... I'm taking this boat down the Grand Canyon. And then he's at the end of it. He's holding on to half of a boat. Mosk is holding on to the other half of the boat. And also, remember all the stuff that Tarkin was talking about in Rebels and in Bad Batch about how the appearance of rebellion is what leads to rebellion.
Mm.
People don't realize that they can rebel until the news gets out about Ferrix that they sent 12 corpos in to retrieve two dudes. All the corpos are dead. The two dudes escaped. And they left behind a sealed NS9 Starpath unit, which they had stolen somehow.
Mm.
This is big news if it gets out.
I hadn't even thought about that.
Well, it's the equivalent of like, police were involved with a shoot, like mall cops were involved with a shootout with some people. 12 mall cops dead, left behind at the scene is the key to a nuclear submarine. And it's like, holy crap.
Wow.
Like, wait a minute. This is a actually serious situation. And I had no idea that people were doing that. And then you read the incident report and you're like, and also one of the pods found itself anchored to, you know, and crashed into a crane or something.
And all of a sudden, this looks like an organized rebellion.
It does.
Which is so cool because I loved that we got this deep look and just a glimpse. We got a deep, meaningful glimpse at the amount of anti-imperial sentiment that has been like living underground on Ferrix, because why else would they have patterns mm-hmm. that they clank out in the street and everyone knows what to do?
Yes, which is get indoors and cause a ruckus if you'd like.
So Tarkin is absolutely correct that it takes so little to light a spark on a planet that has this gasoline line of anti-imperial sentiment running underneath everything. He's 100% right. The doctrine of fear really works until it really doesn't. And it just takes such a little moment to fan it into flames.
There's two interesting things about that. One is that that is fundamentally Machiavelli and the Prince of it is better to be loved than feared. Mm. And then he sarcastically, because that work is a parody.
But if you cannot be loved.
Be feared, because being feared is easier, although it's also like the quick drug hit of power over people. Because when people love you, they'll do anything for you and that you can do no wrong. When people fear you, as soon as that fear is punctured, it is evaporates instantly.
Yeah. I think we see that so beautifully in Mosk and then the people on Ferrix. Mosk loves the Empire. And so the Empire can do no wrong. He will always support the Empire. He is their undying number one foam fan finger fanboy. Mm-hmm. And then the people on Ferrix fear the Empire, but it's pretty easy to overcome fear when you've got a lot of people doing it with you.
Yeah. And the people of Ferrix don't help Mosk and Cyril with their, you know, pile of bodies in the middle of an intersection. And they're really, really angry about
Hassling Marva.
Hassling Marva, because like she's just a old lady and we all love her.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about Marva and the Canary plot?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's do that. I feel like we should talk about Marva and her cool husband, Clem, just because they were such a significant part of this episode, but I glossed over them in the plot summary.
So let's roll up the whole Canary plot line. So at some point, there was an Imperial mine on Canary, and then at some point, all of the parents, adults, disappeared or were killed or were taken away, leaving only children. These children got together, a ship crashes, Marva sees the ship crashing, heads towards it. By the time she gets there, everyone is dead from some sort of leak. And so when Marva gets there, B2 is like, atmospheric levels are normal. And so you can take your masks off, because they brought masks as if there had been like a reactor leak or who knows. But they also, Marva and Clem keep referring to it as the Republic.
Okay, yeah. I had been operating under the assumption all show that the downed ship on Canary was Imperial. But then Marva says the kids on Canary killed a Republic officer.
Yeah.
And the ship that's coming in to mess with the kids is a Republic ship.
So let's do a little bit of math here, because it is 15 years after the first Empire Day.
Andor is.
Yes.
Present day.
Yeah, it's 5 BBY. So it's been 15 years since Order 66, which is also Empire Day.
Yes.
Andor, we figure to be about, well, how old was he in the show, you think?
Cassian?
Yeah, Cassian's.
He looks like early 30s.
Early 30s or mid-20s? Mid-20s to early 30s?
If he is mid-20s, he has lived a hard life.
So that means that when he's like, yeah, I mean, he has lived a hard life. So that means that the events of the Canary stuff are happening during the Republic era. And I think that the ship people, they had separatist logos.
Oh, okay. So this is happening prior to the Clone Wars?
I don't know. It's all very unclear.
My big question, I was shocked when Marva finally says, there's a Republic frigate coming in to investigate the crash site. Mm-hmm. They're going to see that the kids killed a Republic officer and do bad things to them. And my immediate knee-jerk reaction was, why would the Republic kill kids?
I wonder if maybe it's about the right time frame that it's just outside of the Republic and the Separatists. That's like a different Separatist movement that was later encapsulated in the Empire. But there was an Imperial mining accident. Or Marva is referring to it as Republic because she's, you know, that's just what she's used to calling it.
Maybe. I was just like, what is even going on with this timeline that they're There's Imperial and Republic terminology being thrown around, and I just assumed if anyone's killing children, it's going to be the imps. But no, she's worried about Cassian getting killed by the Republic, which to me would only make sense if she's actually talking about the Techno Union masquerading as separatists.
Yeah, it could be that too.
Because the Republic is ostensibly, you know, in cahoots with the Jedi, and the Jedi are not going to go around killing children.
Depends. There's not that many Jedi around. So maybe Marva and Clem are following up on a cruiser that the Jedi shot. It's all very unclear, worthy of some investigation later. But as far as I know, that isn't deeply explored. It's just a danger going on.
It was weird for me because I feel like when I hadn't heard of Star Wars, I couldn't keep all of the terminology straight. Mm-hmm. I was like, what is the difference between the rebellion and the resistance and the republic and the empire? What's mm-hmm. going on? As we've been watching chronologically, I've had such a clear sense of the lines of demarcation between the republic and then the separatists and then the empire. And this is muddling things in a way that makes me uneasy because now I don't know what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
And well, as a new fan, I don't like it.
Maybe it's in like a novelization of this or some further detail, or we'll learn more. I don't really recall. I've only watched this series once. Maybe we'll explore it a little bit more.
Anyway, Marva and Clem are cool.
Yeah. I love the idea of just like being in hyperspace and you see a distress beacon and you're like, welp, let's head over there. They're probably all dead, so let's take their stuff. And that's how you make a living.
Well, but they were so prepared. They had the gas masks. They knew exactly what they were going to go scavenge, which was 6 brand new fuel tanks. Mm-hmm. And the only unknown for them was Cassian having snuck into the command center. But otherwise, they had way better intel than the Bad Batch ever had when they were doing stuff like this.
You think they're working for Sid?
Oh, man. If they are, she's getting a way better deal on their services because they are competent.
Yeah, she never did get a good deal on the Bad Batch because she's like, you guys always do the right thing and that's not what I need you to do.
They never really lived up to their potential as scavengers.
Yeah, well, it's a poor use of their skills, honestly.
But, okay, so here is a little bit what I wanted to talk about. Now we know that Marva stole Cassian off of Kanari mm-hmm. and is his adopted mom. Clem is presumably her partner or her husband. And when Luthen meets up with adult Cassian in the warehouse,
he knows who he is.
Luthen knows a lot about Cassian, including the fact that his dad, Clem, I'm guessing, was strung up in the square on Rix Road mm-hmm. for what, resisting the Empire?
Who knows? It wasn't clear, but he says, yeah, if I was a traitor, then if I get caught, they'll hang me. They'll string me up on the end of Rix Road like they did your father. And that's when Andor pulls the gun on Luthen and says, who are you? Mm-hmm. And that's Luthen being very cool because he says, wrong question. Like, the real question is, do you want to do something about it?
Yeah, no, Luthen is incredible. He is in total control of everything. Like, I love the thought that Luthen, as he's coming in to land on Ferrix in this little junky yacht, and 3 jackdaws is just, you know, talking his ear off.
Jackdawing.
Luthen is systematically hyper-analyzing everything that he's going to do on Ferrix to be the coolest and outsmart everybody. Mm-hmm. That is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Luthen is a hit. He is great. He's also like a huge actor. He's been in a bunch of stuff.
The one thing that I didn't love about the Kanari plotline was that, did you pick up on some white saviorism?
Well, slightly. So Marva is white, Clem is black.
Yeah.
Which
There's a lot of black characters in this episode, which is fun because they're all over the place.
Yes. A lot of the cops are black and
there's citizens on Ferrix who are black as well. And then Clem is black. And I said that it was cool and I liked it because a lot of times if you get a black character in Star Wars, they are deeply tokenized. And a lot of times they're on the bad guy's side. But we get them all over showing a different range of morality and class. And anyway, it's great. But yes.
So the white saviorism of Marva showing up to rescue him, maybe. It would have been a real different vibe. I feel like it would have been sending a different, perhaps also tokenized message in the society we live in to have Marva be played by an elderly Black woman, because the stereotypical perception of an elderly Black woman is one of like sagacity, someone who's extremely like wise, whereas an elderly white woman can be a little bit crazier. And I think that's what they're going with Marva, is someone who's more fierce.
Yeah, yeah.
Without any problems. And I don't know, I think Marva's well cast.
I think Marva's well cast. I was just thinking about the implications of a white woman going to a deeply unsettled and unstable society of people of color and seeing what she perceives to be a child in distress and adopting him and taking him far, far away from his home country and then saying, you never get to talk about where you came from ever again. It gave me Angelina Jolie vibes.
On the flip side, Marva says, I need to give you, this kid is fine. We'll rescue one of them. We need to give you an alibi because the Empire or whomever is going to be killing all the children of Kunari for killing their officer. And so we're coming up with an alibi for you. May as well save your life while you're here. We didn't even know you were here. We're here to loot. We're honestly just straight up looters. And so getting a kid out of the process is just bonus cookies. Like, I'm saving you for reasons of my own. And in fact, that is another thematic parallel, because that is the relationship Luthen and Andor have. Luthen is saying, don't worry about the star path. I'm not here for the star path. It's great. It's gravy. But what I would prefer is you.
Ooh, Andor loves parallels and mirroring, and I hadn't even picked up on that one.
Because it's not about the loot, it's about the people. And Cassian is the people because he's been raised to be this person who will take the fight. And Luthen and Marva both recognized that and both wanted that in their life and wanted to shape it and wanted to have it, because having someone fierce in your life is a powerful ally.
I guess maybe that's a lot more tell than show. So I'm coming at Andor and the character of Cassian Andor. This is my first time meeting him, so I don't have any background information on what he does when, I guess, he's in Rogue One. I haven't seen Rogue One. Like, we haven't talked about Rogue One. I don't know what Cassian is up to later in life. So there's a lot of telling that Cassian is special and not a lot of showing. So when I see Marva plucking Cassian off of Kunari and Luthen plucking Cassian off of Ferrix, I'm like, why? He so far has skittered around, burning through favors, very naively brought a comm unit into a confidential transaction, got himself traced. And the only cool thing we see him do is in episode 3 when he sets off the speeder decoy. So, but everyone keeps saying he's special.
I think people aren't saying he's special. People are inferring that he's special.
Luthen says he's special. It would be a waste to not use your talents.
It'd be a waste to have the mall cops kill you. And so I think he recognizes what Luthen wants is, hey, here's 1,000 creds for how did you do it? Because if you have the cojones to just put on an Imperial technician uniform and walk into like a major military base and steal stuff, that is a repeatable action. I can actually get you to steal stuff that is meaningful, not just stuff to make a profit.
I think he says that to cover the fact that he knows a lot more about Cassian than he's letting on because he knows about Cassian's dad.
Yeah.
I think that was to gain legitimacy in Cassian's eyes. Like, oh, tell me what you did. Oh, that's amazing. Come with me. I think Luthen planned all along to bring Cassian with him because he knows something about him. or many somethings about him.
Yeah. Well, we don't know Jack. There's, there's not.
We don't know three Jack does.
Yeah. This is a crazy. It's surprising that this answered so many questions, but that there's still so many about where this plot is going to keep going. But I'm really excited. I'm having a ton of fun. I loved this episode. That scene where the pod lifts off and then Jabroni McKiltim is like, oh dear. And then just loopity-doopity-doop yo-yos his way into a crane. And that is the instigating factor for things going crazy is delightful. Brasso got it.
Brasso, my man.
Yeah.
A plus.
He's just like walking away from this pod. And you're like, I wonder what he did to that pod. He sabotaged it. Just using his rigger's gloves or whatever. Just fantastic.
It was so good. Mm-hmm. There's one final thing that I picked up on. And I feel like I'm nitpicking this episode, even though I loved it.
Yeah.
Because there were a couple things that really kind of stuck in my craw.
Mm-hmm.
The last one, and then we can go back to gushing over this episode because I really did love it. But the last one is when Bix finds out that Space Tim is the snitch.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, oh God.
Mm-hmm.
With a capital G on the subtitles.
Hmm.
And there, to my knowledge, after thinking about this a lot, and pulling up religion every time it's mentioned in Star Wars, there's no God in Star Wars. There are communities of people who have many gods. Chairman Papanoida mentions that they have a moon goddess and there's like a bunch of idols on his fireplace. But there is not one god.
Well, there might be. There's so there is the existence of pantheons because Qui-Gon Jinn in episode 1 calls it out to the Gungans. And
yeah, the Gungans have gods.
Yeah, and then the Baron Papanoida, so
the Pantorans have gods.
Pantorans have gods. There's angels, and then there's a scene in Empire Strikes Back where Han Solo says, "Then I'll see you in hell." And so somewhere along the line there are ideas which are pantheon related. And the idea of a monotheistic religion is just a polytheistic religion it's not too terribly different. And there's other sets of religions which are like, we recognize that we have a god, you may have multiple gods, our god is our god, you can have as many gods as you want, but we don't worship them.
Yeah, no, I think there can be monotheistic gods in Star Wars, but I think it's lazy writing to call that person God when that is very familiar to one of your main audiences.
That's true.
And so I was disappointed because it pulled me out in a way that I wasn't expecting. So last episode, when we talked about how like gritty and edgy and real Andor has been and seeing people's houses and their bachelor pads and their money problems on Ferrix, that was amazing because it brought an element of realism into Star Wars that I hadn't really seen before. But I feel like when Bix said, oh God, and it wasn't dubbed out or turned into something more thematic or oh Carabast, or one of the many other exclamations we've seen in Star Wars to cover up the fact that people don't want to be saying, oh God, it pulled me out and it was really disappointing.
So one of the funny things about Star Wars is that like all the, because it's space, you can just make, because it's science fiction, you can just make up your own curse words.
You like can, Carabas. Totally.
And it would be cool if they did for exclamations. They also, everyone's clothes are weird. There's no zippers, there's no buttons, and there's no like laces. And so,
yeah, because we're in a different society and the world building rubbed thin for me in that moment. And I was unhappy because you've got a whole room of writers who know that you don't bring in European and American colloquialisms into Star Wars because there's a whole wide galaxy out there and they could say anything.
They could. And they didn't. And maybe that was a moment of laziness. I've found that to be true all across Andor. It is significantly less alien. Much of this could be taking place in like random Netflix science fiction special, you know?
We really only see a couple of aliens kind of skittering through the house where Karn is hiding for the ambush. Mm-hmm. And that's about it. Ferrix is a very human-centric planet.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's, yeah, that's a cheap choice. That's the, because it's really hard to hire aliens. They always, I mean, they're on strike too. And so it's a really, with live action stuff, that just always seems to be the case. And it's kind of a bummer because it is nice to have weird aliens.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't want to harp on the bummer, but it was a bummer. Yeah. I wanted another cool Star Wars exclamation like Carabast.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I didn't get one.
Well, that's all right, because this is still a very adult show with cop violence and ambushes. And gosh, the ambush scene in this is so tight and fraught and filmed with such like good lighting and everything. It's perfect.
And I just love any kind of media, whether it's in a book or whether it's in TV or a movie, where the directors know way more than you do, and they're like guiding you through the heist. Mm-hmm. So I loved being a new viewer who didn't know what was going to happen. It created this incredible feeling of tension and of being like, I don't know exactly what I'm trying to say, but Cassian and Luthen being one step ahead of the mall cops at every stage was incredibly rewarding and fun to watch. And it played into this larger sense that I have with Andor, which is that I am being intentionally led by the hand through this bigger story. And I'm being shown just bits and pieces exactly when I'm meant to see them. And it's comforting to feel like you're in good hands. Mm-hmm. It makes it an incredible experience as a viewer.
Yeah, it does feel very carefully crafted. Mm-hmm. Watching Andor is like going to a very well curated like house or
an exhibit.
Yeah, an exhibit. And you wander around and you're like, oh, they even did the floors this way. They even did the walls this way. The messages in the bathroom are this way. Like everything's, every detail is accounted for, mm-hmm. except for the oh God.
So. Except for that, which is why it stuck out so hard. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's so, I mean, in a way, it kind of illuminates how well done everything else is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Incredible television. Mm-hmm. On that note, do you want to talk about who you thought was the most incredible in this episode?
Sure thing. It's time for Baywatch.
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 Sam. Mm-hmm. Who's your bae?
I'm going to go with Luthen.
Ooh.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Luthen. Luthen strolls into town, says thanks to 3.Jack, rolls up, meets with Bix, and then is like, all right, that's all the information I need. I will never see you again. Goodbye. Bix runs off, and then he goes to the meeting point. He's armed stealthily, but not unprofessionally. He looks like a normal dude walking down the street with a cool collapsible walking stick and literally enough cash to buy a starship in his pocket. What a man.
What a man.
And then
salt and pepper.
As he's sitting there, you know, gun to his head, and he's like, wait a minute, are you getting communications? First of all, rule one, control all your own communications. Only use devices you control, and smashes the communicator. And then slap charges on the door. Rule two, build your exit on the way out.
That
way
was in. So cool.
It was so cool.
Build your exit on the way in? That is a man who has done this a lot.
And he does not look it. He's just a dude in a suit. And he's like,
a dude in a trench coat.
Yeah. He's like, I'm looking for another dude in a trench coat. And that is compelling. It is so compelling. Imagine what Fulcrum, Ahsoka, has been doing this whole time. She's had to sneak into alien bars and recruit people and organize them and be like, hey, so-and-so told me to tell you that you're a rebel and there's more. I can get money to you in places. Like, let's open up a frequency. She's been doing this Luthen is the same. Luthen and Fulcrum are doing the same work in different places, and he's doing it without the benefit of fighting in 1,000 battles under the tutelage of Anakin Skywalker.
Ooh.
He is a dude with a stick.
I mean, it's a sword stick, but yeah, it is a stick.
He doesn't use it. He uses a blaster, but he's like, yep, I have a starship. I am open to, like, I'm not an ambush kind of guy. I pull the strings. And gosh, so cool. So cool.
He's doing the same work also as Captain Rex, but without the benefit of being a clone who can just meld into a clone bar and who has a million connections with his former comrades.
Yeah.
He's raw dogging this rebellion recruitment.
Yes, that is Luthen. Luthen is not Captain Rex. He's not Ahsoka Tano. He's not Harris Syndulla. He's not Cham Syndulla. He's not a hero. He's the person who lets the heroes do their job. He's Gobi Glee. Yeah. No, he's Gobi Glee. He's like, yeah, we'll fly around. We'll teach some people to fly. We'll move some weapons here. We'll pick up some stuff. We'll move a ton of money so that our fearless leaders and our, you know, born in the trenches, shave with a lightsaber, snake eater fighters can do what they need to do. I enable that. And that's his jam. And he's like, ooh, you're hired. Like, you don't know it yet, but you're hired, Cassian Andor.
Wow.
And that is so cool.
So, spoiler alert, I also picked Luthen.
Nice.
For all of the reasons which you have enumerated above.
What an entry to just be like, I show up, I'm double Baywatch, I'm out.
I mean, I hope he's not out because he's incredibly cool. So you have beautifully listed out all the reasons that I picked Luthen. The only other one is that I really admire and respect people who look at other people and immediately see what they're best at.
Mm.
Like people who notice where someone shines the brightest and says, here's where you are amazing. I want to give you opportunities to do what you're amazing at more.
One of the most like flattering but also wonderful things is to be hired for a job and someone's like, I'm going to make a job for you.
Yeah.
We have a U-shaped hole in our organization and we don't know what it is, but we would be foolish to let you go because what you bring is incredible. And we can't like put out a job description that says this without, you know, you're the only person who fills it. And
yes.
That's what he sees in Cassian.
That's what Luthen does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is incredibly cool. I was thinking about great managers when I was thinking about Luthen. Yeah. There's this skill that some really incredible managers have, which is individualization.
Mm-hmm.
They see every person who works with them as an individual and as a diamond, and they try to shine that diamond as bright as they can.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh, and I think it's so great and so cool. And Luthen does it.
Yeah, yeah.
I hope we get a lot more of him.
I'd say he's one of the very main characters of the show.
Okay, so good. He is so fun to watch.
So next week, we're moving into the second arc of Andor here with Aldani. And I'm really excited for that because we are moving in a completely different direction with all new characters.
Mm-hmm.
Although, I mean, Cassian is like the backbone around which the whole thing is built. But this is going to be really fun.
I'm so excited. I love Andor. I get excited just to sit down and watch a beautifully crafted piece of art.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's all on set in weird places that look alien, but not like super alien with weird people. It's fantastic. I'm really enjoying this a lot.
Me too. Okay, Sam, will you remind us again what we're watching next week?
Next week, we're watching season one, episode four of Andor, Aldani.
Aldani. Mm-hmm. I looked at it and was like, Aldhani. And Aldhani. Sam was like, absolutely not.
Yeah, that's how a tourist would pronounce it.
Whoa. Let me put on my white sneakers and grab my little spritzer fan and go see the Colosseum.
So we are going to really move the plot along rapidly because we have a lot of loose ends to deal with. One of them, Cassian now has a new job, question mark. Another one, Cyril Karn now needs a new job, ?
He's gonna.
Yeah. And also, Ferrix just killed a bunch of cops just by happenstance. And Preox Morlana is probably sitting there being like, hey, so it has been 0 days since the last mall cop
death. Oh, no. Pour one out for Karn's boss, the chief inspector, who's at his little conference of mall cop man leaders.
Gosh, I know.
Because he's now going to have to report on, like, 6 deaths.
Yeah.
Or 8 deaths.
And he's like, Cyril, half of these are your, like, more than half of these are your fault. Like, they're specifically your fault.
I specifically told you not to get more people killed.
But that's not something he can say as, like, an excuse, right? Because then his boss would be like, how dare you sweep something under the rug? And he's going to be like, yeah, sorry, I just didn't want any more people killed.
If the chief inspector wasn't so despicable, I would feel bad for him. But instead, I'm just curling my toes in glee. I love when people make Imperials' lives hard.
Ah, I feel bad for him.
Okay, you can feel bad. I won't. Evens out.
I don't know. I feel bad for him. We'll find out next week on Andor. Rip Nameless Chief Inspector. He's probably going to die.
Well, we will find out next week. Make sure you don't miss an episode by hitting the little alarm bell on your podcast app so that you always get a reminder to listen to Growing Up Skywalker when our episodes drop on Tuesdays. You can also really help us out by leaving us 5 stars or writing us a review. It just helps us with discoverability and getting in the headphones of more people who might love what we're doing. You can also find us on social media. We are on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Threads. And finally, if you want even more Growing Up Skywalker, find us on Patreon. You can become one of our monthly members for as low as $3 a month.
On Patreon, we do bonus content related to other Star Wars works. We did some book reports, Naval History Minute, and we've been going through the Tartakovsky Clone Wars recently, and it's real fun.
Season 2 is so good.
It really is. And send this episode to, you know, my runner-up, Bay, is definitely Brasso. Send it to yeah. Send it to Brasso. Send it to the most Brasso person in your life.
Send it to the wholehearted, wholesome, salt of the earth, cool mechanic scavenger man who messes with tyranny in his free time.
Who knifes cop car tires when they're unattended.
Yeah. Send it to that person.
Yeah.
If you're that person,
good work.
Yeah. Good job. Thank you, comrade. And we'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Bye-bye.